All right. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of People Pleaser. We got a live studio audience here on TikTok. We're vacillating between like 250 and 300 people. Got a nice little crew here going. And if you are watching on YouTube, this is the new and improved video version of the podcast. Been doing a video version of this podcast on my channel for a while now. I'll link the playlist to all the past episodes in the comments. If this is the first time you're ever watching an episode of People Pleaser, welcome to it. Welcome to the show. Been doing it for a while. In fact, since it's November of 2024, this is the 5-year mark. I started this, I'm not sure. I want to say November 19th was the first episode of People Pleaser in 2019. I might be wrong on that date, but it was 2019 in November when the first episode of this podcast came out. So it's been 5 whole years doing it. And yeah, I might as well just say the intro now from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood. This is People Pleaser, and I am Austin Archer. Welcome to it. People in the chat keep popping in on our digital studio audience and saying, how are you doing? Are you okay? How are you feeling? And the answer to all of those questions is like, bad, and no, I'm not okay, and I'm feeling not well. Yeah, as I'm recording this, it is Thursday, November 7th, and here in the United States of America, we are getting ready to have Donald Trump be our president again. I have, I've worked as hard as I could. I could always say that I could have done more. I could have attempted different tactics. I could have spoken more level-headed. I could have tried an approach where I appealed more to people's humanity and tried to be softer and kinder. I could have gone after different issues, maybe. Maybe, you know what, maybe I was picking the wrong pressure points to apply my voice and my platform to. I could have tried to appeal to different demographics. You know, I had a lot of people I talked about on my episode last week with Jack about young men and how I had people from the Harris Walls campaign ask me, how do we reach young men? And I said, I don't know. And maybe I could have worked harder to try to figure that out. I don't know. When I try to take inventory of what it is that I could have done better, currently, if I'm being honest, it's hard for me to see. That's not me saying I couldn't have done anything better. Of course I could have. I'm just not sure from this vantage point or at this point what I could have done. And I definitely don't want to fall into the trap of making it my own personal fault that that somehow there was a discrepancy of about 14 to 16 million votes between the 2020 election and the 2024 election, resulting in not only an electoral victory for Donald Trump, but a popular victory. For the first time, a Republican presidential candidate won a popular victory in the 21st century. It's the first time that's happened. It would definitely be very self-aggrandizing, and I think I'd be suffering from pretty delusional thinking if I tried to put this squarely on my shoulders or say that it was my fault, that I should have done something better. But that being said, my comments are just loaded on Threads and on Instagram and on TikTok. And I even think here in this chat right now on TikTok, I haven't been checking, but my comments are loaded with protest voters, third-party voters, people who abstained from voting, who are gloating, who are like kind of lording this terrible national tragedy over me. You know, they seem to be saying that I shouldn't have put so much focus on trying to convince them to not do what they were doing, and I should have put more focus on somehow trying to convince the Harris Walls campaign to campaign differently, as though that's something that I could possibly have any influence over whatsoever. Obviously, my assessment of the situation was that I have a much better chance reaching voters than I do at influencing and reaching the DNC, like reaching the Democratic Party and convincing them to do things differently. I felt like I have a much better chance of appealing to individual voters and people who are more on my level and more within my reach of influence. And so my assessment of the situation was that Trump voters are going to vote Trump. There's nothing I'm going to be able to do to dissuade them from that. people who have been voting Trump, who voted for him in 2016, who voted for him in 2020, were going to do that. And no video from me, no video from some beta soy boy, mustachioed cuck liberal was going to dissuade them from that. And I also figured that there was a lot of people in my audience and a lot of people on the left who would understand the assignment and would vote for whichever candidate the Democratic Party put forward to challenge Trump. They would understand the threat posed by far-right authoritarian Christian nationalism and Project 2025, and they would show up to do their part to oppose that. I figured that this race would be won or lost in the margins of the conflicted voter, the undecided voter, the voter that feels morally or ethically unheard or unseen or unsure of what to do when presented with the predicament of an unsavory binary choice. And I figured that's where my efforts would be best spent in the last, you know, months leading into the election. And all of these people that I was reaching out to have been bragging and saying, boy, it sounds like you wasted your time, doesn't it? Like, you're being real awful quiet now, aren't you? And I gotta say, yeah, somebody just said, stop echo chambering. And, you know, somebody else said, right? Totally, yeah. I gotta say, I don't know what you're bragging about. I don't understand it. I was right. Like, my assessment is I was correct. That after the dust has settled, I was right. The people who were going to vote for Trump voted for Trump. He didn't pick up new voters. In fact, he lost a million or two voters from what he had in 2020. So I didn't need to spend my time trying to, you know, win over those people. There was a strong coalition that's in line with where Democrats vote in general in presidential elections that turned out to oppose Trumpism. And the margin was with the undecided voter, with the people who just, the largest margin was just the people who just decided to just say fuck it and not show up at all. And that is where this election was lost. So when people are bragging to me and saying, like, isn't it hilarious that you spent so much energy and time trying to appeal to those people only to lose? I'm like, yeah, but like the thing that I was afraid of happening is what happened. The reason why I put all of my attention and time and energy into that sector is because they were the ones that I thought were going to win or lose this. And that's what happened. That when you boil it all down, my message to these people was, plain and simply, I understand you do not like this choice. I understand the emotional basis for why you do not like this choice. I understand the ethical and moral objections you have to this choice and to this system. I did not create this choice. I did not create this system. I did not personally appoint Kamala Harris as the Democratic candidate. I did not personally create the two-party system or the establishment powers of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. I was born into it the same as most, as all of you were. However, it is the reality that in November, the choice that is going to be in front of you is going to be Kamala Harris or Donald Trump. That is the choice. Whether you want a different choice or not, whether you want better options, whether you're fed up with the two-party system is irrelevant. It does not matter. The option will be him or her. And that was my goal, is to impart to these undecided people, totally get it, totally get that you've got your objections, that you've got your hangups, totally get that you want a better option that represents your values better, and you feel like you should be entitled to that option. Totally get that you want the Democrats to do a better job coming after your vote specifically and saying what they need to say or doing what they need to do to earn that vote. Totally understand all of that. At the end of the day, doesn't fucking matter. In November, it's going to be her or him. And you have the opportunity, you have the power as a voter to make sure it's not him. And that was my message. And now these people are gloating to me about the fact that it's him. But that's what I said would happen. I said, if you do not help us, if you do not help us do this, it will be Donald Trump. So yeah, I don't really know what these people think that they're getting at when they flood my comment sections bragging. I don't know what you're bragging about. I don't know what you think you've won. I don't know what you think, like, other than just being able to be like, ha ha, the thing, the result you wanted, Austin, didn't happen. And it's like, okay, yeah, but neither did the result you wanted. You know, if your sticking place was Gaza, then your sticking place just got fucked. Your moral sticking place just got blown to shit. So I don't, you know, like, yeah, I lost, but so did you. We all lost. Ha ha, I guess. Congratulations, I guess. It is what I told you it would be. We're going to take a look at some of the comments I got because, you know, sometimes I get accused of strawmanning or putting words in people's mouths or misquoting people. So we're just going to read. And I will say that when I do these shot reverse shot videos where I'm playing both characters, a lot of times I'm just doing that. I'm literally writing the script by using quotes from my own comment section. I'm trying to use the most accurate version of the argument that I possibly can, but let's just take a look at some of these. This person says, imagine if Dems spent half as much energy trying to move the party left as it sped right instead of blaming voters who were offered nothing in this election. We could have had an easy win. Yeah, I can't tell you how many times I see this whole, like, she offered nothing. She offered us nothing. All we needed was a candidate that offered us anything at all, that got people excited at all, and she offered nothing. First of all, that's just objectively inaccurate. That's just objectively, empirically inaccurate. I got really upset yesterday. I was at brunch. I went to brunch with some friends, and we were trying to have like a let's get our mind off of the fact that everything is terrible hang. And this guy who I just met that day, who knew who I was, who knew that I talked about politics online, came over to vent his frustration to me. And I was not in the place where I could hear it at that time. And he was just working through his own emotional experience. But I was trying to let him know, like, hey, I don't really have any answers right now. I'm not in a place where I can give an accurate inventory of what went wrong or like what fell apart. But he was trying to like, He was just working through his own thing. But then he said this thing. He goes like, you know, if she could have just said even once, just one time, said anything that sounded like she cared about Palestinian life, it would have changed everything. And I just was like, she did say that, man. And he goes, what? I never heard her say that. And I got so mad so fast, and I'm not proud of this. I apologize profusely to this man, but I slapped the table and I said, she said it on fucking live TV on the debate. She said it so many times. I can show you so many clips of her saying that she wanted to fight for the dignity and the safety and the freedom of the Palestinian people, that she wanted to establish a two-state solution that honored the safety and the dignity and the freedom of the Palestinian people and their right to self-determination. She said that so many times. And it wasn't fair to this man that I jumped down his throat because he was the receptacle in that moment for all of my frustration, for every single person who I heard say that or who wrote a comment like this in my comment section. You know, if she could have just offered us anything at all. This person says, blaming voters who were offered nothing. You weren't offered nothing. I did a show the other day with Forrest Valkai. We did a live stream and I really liked the way he put it. He said, you know, with Kamala Harris, the worst case scenario is status quo, is things don't change. So that's essentially being on where the offer is nothing, where nothing changes, nothing gets better, nothing gets worse. And that's the worst case scenario that is on offer with that candidate, very bottom end of the spectrum. The best case scenario with Donald Trump is that everything gets worse. Every single issue you care about gets worse. So even at worst case scenario with Kamala Harris, you can't honestly say that you're not being offered anything. You're being offered the chance to stave off the best case scenario with Trump, which is that everything is worse. So even if the offer on the table is nothing, no new things, everything remains the same, that is objectively better than the other option in this binary scenario. The best case scenario with this other guy is that every single issue you care about is going to get worse. Every single person you care about is going to be less safe. That is the best case scenario. And the worst case scenario with Kamala is a little bit more of the same, except that, and that's just on the low end of the spectrum. But she was offering you something. She was offering people in your tax bracket a tax break. More child credits. More housing credits. She's not going to dissolve the ACA without a replacement healthcare plan in place so that millions of people lose their healthcare. She's not threatening mass deportation of 25 million migrants. Only one of the two candidates on offer has said anything even remotely regarding the Palestinian people as being deserving of dignity and protection and freedom. Only one of the two. Now, you might not think that's sufficient. You might not believe her when she says that. But she said it. That's something. She didn't just get up and say, guess what, fuckers? I got nothing. Peace. The way that people talk about her in such a disingenuous way, the way that they talk about this campaign, like, you didn't offer us anything. It's like, you were offered so much. Let's read another comment. This person says, so you're really going to blame the people who sat out, not putting any responsibility on the candidate who ignored what voters asked for? Same thing, right? So first of all, the question, so you're really going to blame the people who sat out? Fuck yes, I am. Are you kidding me? Absolutely, I am. 1,000% I. So you're really going to blame us for just letting Trump become president again? Yeah, that's how that literally works. In a two-party system where you have the voting power to make sure that he's not president and you choose to not use that voting power and to watch as he becomes president again, yeah, that's your fault. Rather than to blame the candidate who didn't listen to voters. And again, this is the other thing. This is why I slapped the table at brunch, because so many voters were saying all we needed from her was just to hear. We just needed to hear the word ceasefire. So we're like, okay, she said ceasefire. She said it so many times. Okay, well, what we need to hear the word arms embargo. Okay, Biden-Harris administration just threatened an arms embargo. Well, that's not good enough. That's just lip service. Well, guess what? That's what a fucking campaign is. A campaign is lip service. You know who else had lip service? Jill Stein and Cornel West and Claudia De La Cruz. They had lip service. Claudia De La Cruz maybe had better lip service than the other two. She at least, when she speaks, it's at least inspiring, but that's what a fucking campaign is. Kamala Harris is not the incumbent president running for re-election and defending her own policies. She is the vice president who has to walk a very thin line of trying to support the current administration while also promoting a new and different vision for a new administration. And all that can come with that in a campaign is lip service. And again, in the binary choice between the lip service that was paid toward Palestine by Harris versus the lip service that was paid toward Palestine by Trump, it's Harris, if you care about Palestinians. There is a reason why Bibi Netanyahu is celebrating a Trump victory. There is a reason why IDF soldiers are in the streets shooting their guns into the air in celebration. This person says, we told Harris that she needed to what she needed to do to motivate people to vote for her. Instead, she chose to loudly and proudly endorse genocide. No, the fuck she did not. I'm not even halfway through this comment, but that's just, no, she didn't. Many of us wanted her to be elected. She ignored us. That was a choice she made. How does she feel about what she did to the country? She could have stopped it. Holy shit. Show me the clip where she stood on stage and said, I'm Kamala Harris, and I loudly and proudly endorse genocide. Holy shit. You like to talk about lip service, right? Because I can show you the clips where she talks about the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, where she talks about the need for an end to the fighting and an end to the bloodshed, where she talks about the need to ensure the safety and the dignity of the Palestinian people. I can show you those clips. But when you say loudly and proudly endorsed genocide and plugged her ears and just wouldn't listen to people, I don't know what fucking campaign you were looking at, and I don't take you seriously. It might not have been enough. You might not believe her, but the options in front of you were this or that. It was her or him. And she said the things she said, and he said the things he said. And those were your options. Yeah, okay. This person is gloating. This person wrote, Oh, hey, look, Kamala lost, and it wasn't because of Jill Stein voters or abstainers. It was Kamala running the Trump 26 campaign's immigration policy and Biden's failed Israel policy. Except, yes, it was the abstainers. It was only the abstainers. It's so crazy to come to me gloating about this and be like, oh, hey, look, it wasn't because people abstained. And it's like, actually, it literally was. It actually literally was. If half of the people who abstained had showed up, she would have won. This is the problem, is this idea that like it's on her for not running a stronger campaign. No, it's on you for not understanding that regardless of how you feel about the campaign that she's running, the choice is what it is. It doesn't fucking matter if you feel like you were owed a stronger campaign or a stronger candidate. It doesn't matter. That was the candidate. And she's not the candidate because I wanted her to be the candidate. She's not the candidate because Austin Archer called up the DNC and said, make it Kamala Harris and don't listen to what anybody else says. She was the candidate because that's how these things work. That's how they've always worked. We've just been given who we are given. You are passing the buck along to this campaign. You're saying they should have run a better campaign if they wanted my vote. If they didn't want me to abstain, they should have run a better campaign. Sorry. You knew what the choices were. You knew what was on offer. If the choice is a cup of battery acid or a cup of room temp tap water that looks kind of sketchy, you're like, I don't know where they got that tap water, but those are your options. And you're like, I don't want to drink that tap water. And if they want me to drink that tap water, they got to make it more appealing. They got to at least throw some ice cubes in there or something. I don't know, put a little like umbrella in it, a little spritz of lemon. Maybe then I'll drink the tap water. And it's like, nope, it's room temp, tepid, sketchy looking tap water, or a cup full of battery acid. Those are the two options. And you're like, I gotta be honest. I mean, I think we're gonna get the battery acid and it's gonna be your fault because you could have put a lemon in that water. You could have put a lemon in that water. And I'm just saying, if you wanted me to drink the water, you could have put a lemon in there and maybe some ice cubes. That's all I'm saying. But the other option is fucking battery acid, you dipshit. It doesn't matter that you want something else. It doesn't matter that your favorite drink is Coke Zero with a little bit of like peach syrup. It doesn't matter that you wanted a Jack and Diet or a gin and tonic. It does not matter. The options that you were offered, the options on the table were battery acid or room temp, tepid tap water. And you made the choice to go with the battery acid. And you can say, no, I made the choice to stay home. And I told you, we told you collectively what that means. You don't get to opt out of this trolley problem. The reason why so many people talk about the trolley problem during elections, the reason why people talk about triage, the reason why people try to give you so many analogies like the one I just did with the battery acid and the tepid water is to try to get it through to you what the reality of a binary choice looks like. And that's why, that's also why people call you petulant and childlike, is because this is like a parent dealing with a toddler and trying to explain to them, you don't get chicken nuggets. What we have is grilled cheese or Cheerios. And the kid keeps saying chicken nuggets, chicken nuggets, chicken nuggets. And it's like that, trying to impart to a three-year-old, you will not eat food. You will be hungry if you cannot bring yourself to eat grilled cheese or Cheerios. Except in this case, as an adult, it's literally poison versus not poison. And we couldn't get you to do it because you were like, she should have given me a better thing. I wanted a better option. Well, you didn't get one. You got the thing that we all told you were going to get. Harris or Trump. And the result is what we told you it would be. You were not right. You did not make some kind of message. You did not change the world. You did not challenge the duopoly. You sure as fuck didn't get your precious 5% you were trying to get. You didn't even get 1%. God, oh my God. Is this the maddest I've ever been on the podcast? Might be. Whew. This person says third party voters exist because the other two parties truly lost them. I can never in good conscience vote for Trump, but it's Democrats that truly lost me. I'll never vote for either major party again. This is why I spent months focusing on this demographic and trying to convince this demographic that you can't say, I will never vote in good conscience for Trump. I can't do that. But I also can't vote for the Democrats. That is not an option you have in a two-party system. In a binary choice, that is not an option you have. I think psychologically, the reason why people have a hard time grappling with the reality of binary options is because we live in a spectral world. And what we are increasingly learning about, especially as progressives and people on the left, is that so many aspects of our lives and our identities are spectral. Our gender, our mental health, our sexuality, our physical health. So many things about the way that we experience the world are spectral, you know? Our likes and our dislikes, our preference for this movie versus that movie or this food versus that food. It all exists along a spectrum. It's so rare in life that something is cold and binary, but we are offered in many situations in our lives. The reason why the trolley problem exists as a philosophical exercise is to educate about the reality of cold, hard, binary options. And that can be hard for us in a world where we're like, no, I can fine tune. We're increasingly in a progressive world, we can fine tune our experience to, I have this specific gender expression or this specific sexuality expression or this specific, you know, like a collection of diagnoses that describe my experience with mental health or physical health. And everything is on a spectrum. And I'm somewhere in that spectrum and that's where I sit. And we get a much better understanding of ourselves and our place in the world and our relationship to the people around us. And because of that, we naturally want a spectral experience politically. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that desire. I share that desire. I understand the frustration of saying, I don't like either one of these options. I'm going to be completely honest with you. I did not vote in the first three elections that I was eligible to vote in as an adult. And it's because I was not wholly satisfied with either of the options on offer. I wanted a very specific thing, and I felt like if neither one of these people is the thing that I'm looking for, then my vote should be I pick neither of them. And I felt really confident about that vote. I felt really justified in that vote. I felt really like this makes sense. Like they're giving me two options. I feel like that's inadequate. I feel like that's not enough. Especially when it comes to picking the leaders who are going to govern over a country of 350 million people. And I want more options available to me. I want the ability to pick someone who aligns with my values more. And if I can't do that, I'll just abstain and that will be my vote. I understand why you want that. I get it. I've lived it. I've been through it. It is the height of privilege and ignorance to believe that that is something you can afford to do when people's lives are on the line. I was doing it as a philosophical exercise. It was, to me, it was just purely a statement about how I felt things should be. That I felt like, no, this two-party establishment, you know, duopoly that owns our political system, that's not right, and there should be more options. And so I'm going to vote in a symbolic way to philosophically challenge that. It was immature and selfish and self-serving, and it was directly informed by my own political ignorance and by my own privilege as a white, straight, cisgender man. As someone whose life would not be on the line from whatever decision was made, I had the luxury of saying, neither one of these is really fitting specifically with me. And I think that it's important that I challenge this system and I push back on it. There's a reason why Black Americans overwhelmingly turn out and vote for the Democratic Party. And it's not because they're stupid. It's not because they've been tricked by the Democratic Party. It's because their lives are at stake. There's a reason why people from pretty much every marginalized community turn out and vote blue. And it's not because they've been tricked. It's because they don't have the luxury of making some kind of philosophical protest gesture. It is a matter of life and death. This person says, vote shaming has never worked. Why are you blaming voters instead of the candidate? Because the voters are the ones who have to pick between the two candidates. That's it. One thing I haven't talked about yet on this podcast, on this episode, is just the glaring double standard and hypocrisy that exists. And obviously, voters on the left, people who are in my audience, people who are frustrated, people who abstained, people who voted third party will agree with this. But the fact that the Republican Party can run the most unqualified, terrible, awful human being imaginable for the most important job in the world, a 34-time convicted felon, a person who openly mocks disabled people, a person who had a hate rally just weeks before the election, had comedians on stage calling Puerto Rico an island of garbage. He himself, in his first presidential campaign, said that Mexico just sends rapists and drug dealers and the worst people imaginable over the border. And somehow still polls well with Latino men. That's the, you know, I will say I was going to look at some demographic breakdowns on this episode, and I don't think I'm going to because there's nothing really to learn from them. They pretty much go the way that we expected them to go. The only one that I look at and go, what the fuck, guys, is Latino men. What the fuck, guys? White people did what white people do. We were just just under 50% of us voted for Harris. About 45% of us tried to be decent, but white people, you know, and we represent the largest demographic in the voting block. So there's a lot of power there. Yeah, the candidates are the candidates. You can whine about wanting a stronger candidate or wanting a stronger campaign from the candidate, but also that's crazy to do in a world where Donald Trump is the alternative. It's insane to be looking at the campaign that Donald Trump just ran and say, she should have ran a better campaign than that. She did. She ran a campaign that was 100 times stronger than the Trump campaign. She ran a much, much, much stronger campaign than the Trump campaign. Could she have ran a better campaign? Sure. Could everyone always technically do better than they did? Sure. Absolutely. But it's so crazy, this double standard of saying it's on her. She needed to be a stronger leader. She needed to be a better candidate. She needed to run a better campaign. Better than Donald Trump? Because that's the goal. The only person she needs to run a better campaign than is her opponent. And if she does that, then she earns your vote in a binary situation. Because if you don't vote for her, if you say not good enough, then that means Donald Trump wins. And you know how I know that? Because that's what just happened. This is no longer a hypothetical. You can no longer say, no, that's not. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Because here we are. Learn this lesson. This is the lesson to learn coming out of this election. Learn this lesson. You live in a spectral world that often offers you difficult, unfair, binary choices. And you have to make difficult, unfair, binary choices that do not sit well with your spectral nature. You are a multifaceted, spectral being that contains multitudes, that is full of empathy and compassion for lots of different issues and people and communities. And a cold, hard, binary option often does not appeal to that. But often in this world, you are asked to make those choices anyway. It boggles me the amount of people that are telling me that, like, you know, oh, well, this strategy hasn't worked. This person wrote, I don't think that lecturing the electorate has been successful so far. Well, I don't think that you telling the Democratic Party, give me a better candidate, or I won't vote, or I'll vote third party. I don't think that's worked so far. I saw this over and over and over again during this election cycle. I kept seeing third party voters or protest voters saying, you need to come to us. They'd say, how come you're spending all of your time trying to convince me to go where you are instead of you just coming to me? And I was like, because of math, because of how math works, because they're somewhere in the vicinity of 65 to 80 million people who will turn out and vote for the Democratic Party. And there's like less than a million who are going to vote for your option. So what is easier, me trying to appeal to the very small minority of voters who are in your position, who are considering abstaining or voting third party, or me trying to convince the tens of millions of Harris voters to vote for Jill Stein or to abstain? What's more likely? This idea, like, hasn't worked so far. Neither has your strategy. Trump got the numbers he was going to get. He got the numbers he was going to get. We didn't show up. That's what happened. This person wrote, right, this was your turnout messaging for your candidate and it didn't work, and you're doubling down instead of learning. That's probably why people are giving you shit. The binary reality of American politics is not a secret insight you've uncovered. All over the country, people stayed home because this is all you had to offer them, and sadly, to all of our peril, it was not enough. Yeah, so I'm going to address this sentence here. The binary reality of American politics is not a secret insight you've uncovered. I'm aware of that, commenter. I am aware that the binary reality of American politics is not some secret reality that I just stumbled onto because of my big, good brain. It is, in fact, a very obvious, plainly observable, objective reality that I was pointing at and saying, look at that. That is what it is. Please don't ignore that. Please don't pretend that that very obvious fact is not a very obvious fact. I am not the one who is doubling down here on my stupidity. The thing that I said would happen when I was pointing at that very obvious, observable, objective reality that I was saying, regardless of what you want the American political system to be, regardless of who you want your candidate to be, your choices will be Harris or Trump. And based on what you do, it will be one of those two people. And then that is exactly what happened. So I'm not doubling down on something I was wrong about. I'm reiterating something I was objectively correct about. You are doubling down that somehow things would have been different if we had all just gone harder for your losing strategy. And again, this thing, all over the country, people stayed home because this is all you had to offer them. And sadly, to all of our peril, it was not enough. This is not all I had to offer them because that was my choice. This is not Austin Archer's offer to the American people. This is not Walter Masterson's offer to the American people. This is not, Pearl Mania's or Good Trouble's or, Booker Squared or any of the other political influencers you might follow, I Am Legally Hype, Jolly Good Ginger. This is not our offer to the American people. This is not the offer that we made. The reason why this is the choice we were presenting with you is because this is all that there was to offer. We didn't all get together in a room and go, hey, what do we think a good offer would be? Like one or the other? Or should we offer like ranked choice voting or more choices? We were telling you this is the choice. It doesn't matter what I think. It doesn't matter what you think. It doesn't matter what anybody thinks. It doesn't matter what you want. These are the options that are on offer. I do want to go to this question of like, was her campaign actually that bad? Because man, these people really do speak with a lot of confidence of like, should have had a better campaign. And I will say, all she had to do to have a winning campaign was have a better campaign than Donald Trump. And she did that. She accomplished that. But also, I just think that so many of these people weren't actually paying attention to the specifics of the offers in the platform. It's not a bad platform. And it was not a campaign. Not a bad campaign. I actually followed the campaign and watched it very closely. And very regularly, when voters would say they wanted something, it would show up in their messaging within a few days. It was so frustrating to watch them continually capitulate to what their voters were saying they wanted, and then having those same people either move the goalpost or pretend they didn't hear it. And just be like, well, boy, if they would just say something about this issue. And it's like, well, they just did. They just did. So I don't, there's one other thing I want to talk about. And then I'm going to get into the comments over here on our TikTok live stream. And this is something I'm not sure you know, I don't know what this means for the future of American politics, but there's something that happened in this election. Now, again, Donald Trump did not pick up new votes, but he did. He kind of killed us with, you know, with men, white men and young men. And when it comes to my own personal role in this election cycle as a political messenger, influencer who talks about politics on the internet, I really don't know what to do. I don't know how people like me are supposed to compete with Elon Musk giving out, doing $1 million giveaways and spending hundreds of millions of dollars in ads for Donald Trump. I don't know how we're supposed to compete with Joe Rogan and the reach that he has and the stranglehold that he has over men. I've been saying this for years, but it is, you know, the right loves to complain about how the media is biased and has a left-wing bias and how, you know, Hollywood is all biased and leans left. No, Hollywood has a capitalist bias. The media has a capitalist bias. And when it comes to who has more money and power and influence and the ability to spread their message far and wide, we're getting killed. The left is getting absolutely decimated. There's been a lot of talk in this election cycle. I get a lot of comments from people asking me how much money I make. You know, I get a lot of commenters saying, are you getting paid to do this? All I'll really say about that, to that question is, yeah, this is my full-time job. And it's been my full-time job for 5 years. Sometimes I have to find different ways to make money. I'm an actor, a professional actor. So sometimes I act in commercials or TV shows or movies. I'm a musician. Sometimes I write songs that get, you know, picked up for sync licensing and I get a little money that way, or I'll sell a record or two on my Bandcamp. I got a Patreon. I've got people who, you know, subscribe to a monthly service to help me do what I do. And I do brand deals with my social media platforms. And also as a political commenter and a person who advocates for sociopolitical issues, occasionally third party nonprofits and political activist organizations will reach out to people like me and sponsor a video or two. And that's all I feel required to say about that. People wanted to treat it like it was some kind of scandal, like they'd stumbled upon some kind of hidden truth. But like, yeah, it's my job. It's what I do for work, and we find ways to pay our bills. But as I say in the intro of this show, from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, that's not a lie. I live in a one-bedroom apartment where I can barely afford the rent. Tim Pool lives on a compound in a mansion and gets paid hundreds of thousands of dollars to repeat Russian propaganda. Everyone thought that they were uncovering some kind of like bombshell, you know, discovery when they found out that some of us make money from time to time. Very little money, I'll add. The vast majority of the work that I do when it comes to political advocacy and messaging is free. What I'm doing right now is free. My podcast I do for free. The vast majority of videos I produce I do for free. Most of the time that I'm making politically charged videos, I'm doing it for free. The only times I ever am able to get any money whatsoever is like during midterms and during elections. And the videos that I do are like the tamest videos I make. It's like the tamest takes imaginable. And they're things that I say for free every single day. It'll just be a video of me being like, hey, we should have safe legal access to abortion. We should have common sense gun safety legislation. And people act as though I'm getting paid hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars to like spread vaccine misinformation or something. I'm doing this with cheap equipment out of my bedroom. And I have been doing it that way for 5 years, barely scraping by. And the majority of people I know who do this work are the same. We're not getting rich. They're not dumping hundreds of thousands of dollars. They're not dumping truckloads of money into our bank accounts to make us push propaganda. They're paying us a little bit of money from time to time to say things we already say for free so that we can afford to keep doing that work for free. And personally, I find the idea that the only way our work can have any credibility is if we exclusively do it for free, I find that idea to be repugnant and wildly offensive. How dare you, A, think you're entitled to know what's in my bank account and who pays me, and B, how dare you think that my work has no merit unless I don't get paid for it? if you're worried about people getting paid to like spread misinformation or spread propaganda, don't look at the left. It's the right that's doing that. We're getting killed by these people. They have so much more money, so much more influence than us, and I honestly don't know how to compete with it. You should be glad that the few of us that get paid what we do get paid at all, so that we can at least have some kind of voice in the fight. Because if we weren't making money at all doing this, then we would have nothing. We would have basically no reach whatsoever and no influence whatsoever. So the funny thing is, it was a lot of Jill Stein voters who thought that I was getting paid to message about Jill Stein and to talk shit on third party voters. I didn't get paid a single cent. The third party voters were all in their tinfoil hats thinking that like I was, everybody kept saying that I was making like $15,000 a video to shit on Jill Stein. Didn't make a cent, did it for free because I didn't want third party voters and protest voters fucking up the election. I thought it was important enough to do that work for free. And I would do it all over again if I could. I'm going to do what comes next last. Let's go to some comments over here. Bloomboy says, don't just focus electorally. Dems have proven incompetent. Work with your communities. Work within your communities. Absolutely. A community is going to be incredibly important while we heal and try to organize and strategize for next steps. But make no mistake, in the midterm elections, you are going to be voting between Democrats and Republicans. Again, you are not going to be voting for a viable green ticket. And if another presidential election comes around in 4 years, and I don't say if lightly, I say that seriously, if another presidential election it comes around and you have an opportunity, you are going to be voting between Democrats and Republicans. And I will say I take a little bit of issue of this Dems have proven incompetent thing. I would say it is the electorate that has proven incompetent time and time again. I would say that an electorate that cannot recognize the clear, evident difference between what is on offer with a Donald Trump presidency and what was on offer with a Harris presidency, I would say that is a failure of effort, of intellectual effort by the electorate. Not a failure by the Democratic Party. If we show up, we win. Period. And everybody wants to pull up all the demographics and show you how people voted in which regions and which age ranges. But it comes down to this. If we show up, we win. We didn't show up. And if you want to say, well, that's the Democratic Party's fault. They're incompetent. They should have ran a better campaign. Could they have ran a better campaign than themselves, than the campaign that they ran? Sure. But in the binary choice, the only thing they needed to do was be better than their opposition, and they were. Significantly, objectively, in every single category, they were better. They had a better platform in every single category. If we show up, we win. Marley says, Harris would have been a stagnant choice. Trump is leaps backward. Choice is obvious, even if imperfect. Yeah. Like I said earlier, quoting my friend Forrest Valkai, the worst case scenario with Harris is stagnation, is nothing much changes, status quo, everything more or less stays the way it is. Which, you know, to be fair, not the worst thing imaginable. Our economy has been trending upwards and recovering faster than any other of the, you know, wealthy developed nations in the world from the pandemic. We have had a kind of record-breaking economic recovery. And if the status quo of that stayed on track, that would not be the worst thing imaginable. If the status quo of the ACA stayed on track, obviously I would like a better healthcare plan eventually than the Affordable Care Act. But the Affordable Care Act is a better plan than just no plan, which is what we're going to get with Donald Trump. So even in a situation where things more or less stay the same, which is not ideal, it's better than the best case scenario with Donald Trump, which is everything gets much, much worse. Battery acid, tepid, sketchy room temp tap water. I don't like that tepid, sketchy room temp tap water. I'd feel a lot better if it was like a cool Sprite or a nice cold beer. Or, you know, if you could just spruce it up a little bit with a lemon. Could you? No? That's all that's on offer? Okay, I'll take the water over the battery acid, please. Because I'm not a moron. Yeah. And then somebody, Snap Crackle Pop Tart says, but the water wasn't sketchy at all. I agree. I don't think that the water was sketchy at all. I actually think that Kamala Harris was the strongest candidate that I've seen since Barack Obama. I think she was a stronger candidate than Hillary Clinton and a stronger candidate than Joe Biden. COVID had a record turnout of voters because of we were in a global crisis, a global emergency. And we also had so much more access to early voting and mail-in voting. But what COVID should have shown the American people, and especially people on the left, is the simple reality that when we vote, we win. We win overwhelmingly. One thing that hasn't been touched on in this conversation, and I take full responsibility for this, I should have mentioned it earlier, is the misogynoir in place of all this, the misogyny and the racism. If you try to pretend like that's not an issue in this election, you're not being honest. It obviously is. There's obviously just a problem with the fact that the country, it just wants a man. It could be the worst possible man imaginable, a man who has been held liable for sexual assault, a man who lies with every breath that comes out of his body, a man who just is disgusting and foul in every single way, who has conned every person he's ever been in business with, who every major business he's ever been a part of has failed, a man who is objectively just embarrassing and not cool and gross and repugnant, is better than a woman. And a woman of color, forget about it. I owe a lot of, if I owe anybody an apology, it's when she first announced, there were a lot of women of color online who were posting things like, the country's never gonna let this happen, they're never gonna elect a black woman. And I like quote posted a few people on Threads and said, is it okay if I come back and gloat when you're wrong, when we elect her? I was so confident, I was like, is it okay? Because I thought this would be a good thing to gloat about, to be like, I could totally get why you thought that no one was going to elect her, but I really think we're going to, and it's going to be awesome. And they were like, sure, by all means. And I'm here today to say, I am so fucking sorry. I'm so sorry that as a white man, I allowed myself to get caught up in the hype and I was blinded to the obvious reality of this country. I dropped the ball on that one big time, and I'm really sorry. Reb Fem says they will realize their mistake, including the casual Trump voters. It will be too late. My biggest fear is that they won't. Again, I go back to this thing of like, is it a failure of the Democratic Party? Is it incompetence on the part of the Democratic Party? Or is it a failure of the electorate and incompetence on the part of the electorate? I am worried that the electorate doesn't have the ability to learn the proper lessons. Now, I gotta say that it's so hard when we talk about stuff like this because about 68 million of us did show up. That's not a small number. It's way more than the people who did show up. It's, you know, but there's like a 15 or 16 million vote swing from 2024 to 2020 of people who didn't show up, who did vote 4 years ago, who didn't vote now. But those numbers were an anomaly 4 years ago. Normally, it's about this many people who do show up for Republicans and Democrats. And what we normally also have is about 60 million registered voters who never show up. So there's tens of millions of people who just like never, ever participate. And they never seem to learn the lesson. It always seems to be the same people en masse showing up, the same people who refuse to not vote third party, the same people who refuse to not abstain, and the same people who are going to vote red or vote blue, no matter what the case is. And so when you say they'll realize their mistake, I don't know. I remember when Trump was first elected in 2016, there was this trend going around on Twitter that was called like Trump regrets or Trump grets or something. And it was Trump voters who were posting the reasons why they regret voting for Donald Trump. And it was very cathartic because we all got to share those around and go like, oh, they get it. They get it. They get how they fucked up. And then in 2020, he basically pulled the same numbers that he did in 2016. Like nothing really changed. The only thing that changed is that like there was just like record turnout for there was this record repudiation in the Democratic vote. And then he's basically held pretty much within the margin of a million or two he's basically held his spot over the last three elections. So when we say they'll learn, I don't know. I don't know that they will. And it makes everything I do feel very, I feel incredibly small today, right now, this week. I feel like I've expended so much emotional energy on something that I don't know if I'll ever actually be able to affect in any meaningful way. But I also don't know how to just stop caring or stop trying. Bearded Musings says, do you think the reduction in voters was a result of apathy or voter suppression? Honest answer, most honest answer, no idea. Speculative answer, I think it's both. I do think that there is a lot of, and like I said, messaging from the left when it comes to spending on messaging on social media and, you know, like platforms, there's so much more money in right-wing messaging and right-wing propaganda than there is on the left. Like, we're operating, I wish I could talk about money in politics more, just so that people understood, like, yeah, I know that these two parties have corporate interests and they have corporate sponsors that are dubious and make you very wary of them, but the foot soldiers on the ground, the people like me, we're a grassroots movement, dude. Like, we're operating with so very little. We're operating with, like, 99% just passion and heart. And we're getting very, very little money to sustain us while we do this work. Meanwhile, right-wing talking heads and social media personalities work from studios. They work from million-dollar studios with, like, budgets, and they get paid millions of dollars a year to host their podcasts and their YouTube shows. And that's why, like, when you watch right-wing media on YouTube or on social media, it's so much, like, more professionally produced than the stuff that we do, because they actually have money. And, yeah, they work with, like, Russian agents, and there's a reason why the Republican Party was, like, pro Jill Stein and pro third party. They recognize the benefit that Jill Stein and the third party poses to their movement, and in terms of voter suppression, they want voters to feel disenfranchised and discouraged. And so there was a lot of messaging that I think discouraged and disenfranchised people that leads to voter suppression. But also, I do think that there was just some apathy. And I also think that there was a good amount of that was a protest that was just like, nope, I can't in good conscience support either candidate, so I will stay home. I think it's a combination of factors. I will say on the level of misinformation and voter suppression that I wish people could get a better grasp of is, in the Electoral College, which I do think should be abolished, I do think the Electoral College is largely undemocratic. And I'm saying that in a, you know, election where Donald Trump didn't just have an electoral victory, but a popular victory. He won it both ways. But the Electoral College does have a lot of problems, obviously, and just shouldn't be a thing. It should be, at least at the federal level, it should be one vote, one person. But that being said, one of the most pernicious and successful lies of the Electoral College, and this is deliberate propaganda that is fed to voters, is that if you are in a traditionally blue or traditionally red state, and you are a voter who votes against what that state normally does, you shouldn't even bother showing up. And this works way better on blue voters than it does on red voters. Red voters in California turn out. They show up. They know that California is not going red, but they show up and they vote. They show up. But in red states, where I'm from, Utah, Indiana, Oklahoma, you know, Texas, Florida, blue voters get so discouraged and so disenfranchised and feel like there's no point in showing up. And again, when you look at the margins in these races and you look at, like, the numbers of registered Democrats in these states that didn't bother showing up and voting, you see again and again and again that these states absolutely would have been in play if people would have just shown up. And I really wish there was a way for us to get that information out there, that even in the undemocratic Electoral College, your vote still matters in a swing state. Or not in a swing state, in a spoken for state. Every state can be in play if people just show up. I don't know, and I don't know how to get that message out there, because I'm not Joe Rogan and I'm not Ben Shapiro. I'm not I don't have my own media network called the Daily Wire. I don't know how to combat the massive wave of highly funded disinformation and propaganda that we are competing with. Yeah, this person must have just shown up. This is DangerMan5000 wrote, "Too bad Kamala ran such a centrist platform with basically zero leftist policies." Boy, leftists really overestimate their own influence in the voting bloc. Did you see the numbers that leftist protest voters polled at? Less than 1%. Did you see that? Like, adding Jill Stein together with De La Cruz or Cornel West, that it was like less than 1%. Did you see that? And you think that that entire campaign should have been catered to that less than 1%, and that would have made it successful? Also, this idea that her entire platform was catered to try to like woo Republican voters. It was progressive policies up and down on that platform. Taxing giving a higher tax rate to the highest tax bracket. That's a left policy. That is a progressive policy, not a conservative one. Giving tax breaks to low-income families and housing credits and family credits, entitlement programs. Those are social programs. Those are socialist programs. Those are leftist programs. Those aren't conservative programs. Those aren't conservative policies. Saying that she's going to try to find a two-state solution that honors the dignity and the safety and the self-determination of the Palestinian people. That is not Trump's position on that issue. So not only are you wrong, like, not only is it stupid to think that if she had just sold out and just gone as far left as possible, that would have somehow resulted in better numbers, because you don't actually have that big of an influence. She would have lost tens of millions of votes if she had done that. You overestimate your actual poll and your actual influence. But also, the platform was progressive. It wasn't progressive enough for you. And so you allowed one of the most totalitarian, fascist, ultra far right Christian nationalist platforms in the history of American politics to win, because her platform didn't cater to you enough. I don't know how to educate you. I don't know how to get it through. I just don't know how to do it. I don't know how to get you to see it. Yeah, Jabronius just said, genocide is a very hard line to cross. One hell of a single issue, right? Yeah, okay. So let's talk about this a little bit. Let's talk about the genocide. I said earlier in the episode that I wanted to read comments directly so that I can't be accused of misquoting people or strawmanning people. Oftentimes when I make my shot reverse shot videos, whether it's me doing a third party or protest voter and the other person is like representative of me, or a Trump voter and the other person is representative of me, whoever I'm making fun of in that video, whoever I'm calling out in that video, they show up in my comments to be like, this is a straw man. And they don't know what a straw man is. Like, the similarities between third party and protest voters and Trump voters are so many. It's crazy. There's so many similarities. But this is a big one, is that, like, you don't know what a straw man argument is. A straw man argument is when I intentionally misrepresent your position to make your position seem weaker than it actually is, so that I have an easier time contending with it. That's what a straw man is. A straw man isn't just like when I do like a character that's based on you and the character is unflattering. And you're like, I don't like how that character makes my position seem stupid. It's like, if I'm not inaccurately characterizing your position, then it's not a straw man. If the position is correct, if I'm using direct quotes from the people from your movement, if I'm doing everything I can to contend with the argument as it is accurately portrayed to me, then it's not a straw man. The way I act in the scene, the caricature might be less than flattering, but I'm not making your position weaker to have an easier time contending with it. Now, the reason why I say this is, what you are doing here, when you do this thing, and this is just again and again and again with you people, when you do this thing where you're like, wow, I guess, you know, you just, the genocide, genocide wasn't a hard line for you, huh? When you frame the conversation as though it is pro-genocide versus anti-genocide, that is the textbook definition of a straw man. I need you to hear this. You are straw manning when you do that, because it never has been my position that we should vote for Kamala Harris because we want more genocide. It is not, that is not the position of any Harris supporter. It's not Kamala Harris's position. It's not, her platform was not, hey, more genocide 2024. Keep the genocide going 2025. That is a mischaracterization of our position. And it's an intentional mischaracterization. You're doing it on purpose to make our position seem less defensible, and so that you have an easier time arguing for your own position. But that is not what the actual parameters of the conversation are. It is not pro-genocide versus anti-genocide. It is two people who are disgusted by what is happening in Gaza with conflicting strategies on how to best help and resolve that situation. We believed that in the binary reality of Trump versus Harris, Harris represented the best possible chance at negotiating some kind of harm reduction for the people in Gaza. That was our position. Not that what is happening in Gaza is good and we want more of it. Our position was it's bad, and we believe we will have an easier time fighting for the dignity and the safety of those people under a Harris administration than we will under a Trump administration. That is the honest disagreement. So if you want to engage with the argument and the conversation in an honest way when it comes to the genocide in Gaza, you need to explain why you believe that a Trump administration is better for the people in Gaza than a Harris administration is, because those are the options on offer. And every time you do this, every time you try to say, well, sorry, you guys couldn't meet us on the genocide thing, it's like, that's not, you're straw manning. You are not being honest. You are not engaging with the conversation in an honest way. You can go watch hours and hours and hours and hours of my videos and try to find me once defending what's happening in Gaza. All I've done for a year straight is, in the most strong language I possibly can, absolutely rebuked everything that the Israeli government and the IDF have done over there. That's all I've done. It's just called it an absolute humanitarian disaster, one of the worst humanitarian crises of my entire life, expressed nothing but sorrow and sympathy and empathy for what's going on there, and then tried to figure out a viable strategy for how I could best help. And in a binary scenario, in a presidential election where I'm offered this or that, Trump or Harris, my estimation was that Harris was unequivocally the safer bet for harm reduction. What was apparent to me was, if it's not her, it's going to be him, and he will be worse. And now it is him, and you're going to get to witness what happens next, and you're going to keep telling yourself, well, I didn't do this because I refused to participate. But you did do this. It is on you. If you are honest about what actually happened. We told you. We told you and we told you and we told you and we told you that you don't get to just wash your hands of this. You're already complicit. Your tax dollars are already over there. We all don't like it. I don't like it just as much as you don't like it. But when it came down to what are we going to do about it, we had an idea of what we could do, and you said nothing. You said, I don't want to do anything. And that's what's honest. That's what's true about that topic and about that issue. You had an opportunity to do something and you chose to do nothing. Yeah, I love this too. Amalie just said, who's it getting worse for? It's already worse for them. This is the other... as long as I live, I don't know if I'll ever fully understand this all year long, that people could not wrap their heads around the idea of an already horrific situation becoming worse when that's what they were already witnessing. So let me just a little bit of history for you. The situation that you have been watching live streamed into your brains for the last year, this awful, horrific genocide that's been taking place in Gaza, it did not start happening after October 7th, 2023. This has been happening every single day you've been alive. I'm going to say that again because I genuinely don't know if you're aware of this. This has been happening every single day that you've been alive, every single day of your life, every birthday party you've ever gone to, every family vacation you've ever gone to, every time you went to Disneyland, every time you went to a comedy show and laughed at a comedian, every single time you had a picnic with your friends and had a nice afternoon, every single day your tax dollars were funding the ethnic cleansing and apartheid state of the colonialist project that is the country Israel. Every single day of your life. It has been happening since longer than you've been alive. Life over there for Arab people, for Palestinian people, has been a nightmare for a very, very, very long time. It is so when you ask the question, how could it possibly get worse when it's already bad? Let me tell you what it was like before October 7th. Communities separated by giant concrete walls with automatic machine gun turrets on them that would shoot people for trying to cross those walls. A fully government-sponsored apartheid state that is ethnically split, where the rich and wealthy people who live on the hills are an invading colonial force who has overtaken neighborhoods that did not belong to them, bulldozed communities to the ground. They dump their trash on top of people's heads. Israeli citizens dump trash onto Palestinian people's heads. And it's been like that it's been like that my entire life. They've been living in that state, in an open air prison, for decades. And you ask the question, how could it get worse? And now you're seeing it get worse. This whole last year, that's what worse looks like. So it was a very, very, very bad situation that got worse. This idea that bad things can't get worse is so unbelievably like ignorant and short-sighted, and I just don't know where it comes from. I don't know who told you this. I don't know what you are observing in the world that you don't believe that a bad situation can get worse. That is your rationale. That you watch something like that and go, well, there's no way that could possibly get worse. Yes, it could. And yes, it will. It can always be worse. In fact, anytime someone like you asks that question, how could it possibly get worse? You're almost invoking something cosmic in the universe to ensure that it does. It's literally like the joke from Young Frankenstein when Igor says to the Dr. Frankenstein, he goes, could be worse, could be raining, and then it starts raining. Like when you ask that question, when you go, how could this possibly get worse? You're almost guaranteeing that we're about to find out. Yeah, Jessica just said 1 million dead people. That's horrific. 5 million dead people. That's worse. And it is. You know, Jack, who was on my podcast last week, said something in his video about voting ethics that I really liked. He said, if you bomb 1,000 houses and somebody else bombs 100,000 houses, those two people are guilty of the same crime. The severity of the crime is the same. You have leveled entire communities and killed entire families. You are a murderer in either case. The difference between those actions is felt most prominently and profoundly understood by the 99,000 families in between those two numbers. So yes, 100,000 homes being leveled and 1,000 homes being leveled, it almost seems ridiculous to try to make some kind of moral parsing between the value of those two. It's like, either way, that's terrible. Either way, that's awful. Either way, whatever's going on there is a war crime, is a crime against humanity. But the difference is absolutely felt. The distinction is real for the 99,000 people who are spared in the 1,000 home scenario. it is impressed, or sorry, somebody wrote impressed and I read it on the screen. There is a difference for them. And the 100,000 home scenario is worse than the 1,000 home scenario for them. And none of these people, none of the people who it's about to get worse for in Gaza, none of these people who are going to see an escalation of violence from the IDF are going to be thinking to themselves, boy, I'm sure glad that those protest voters in the United States held to their guns. I'm sure glad that they stuck with their morals. I'm sure glad that they that genocide was a hard line for them. I'm really glad. They're not going to be thinking that. They're not going to be thinking, that's really cool that those white people in America, you know, had a hard line. At least they didn't, you know, they sent a symbolic gesture that meant nothing. And now even more of my family and more of my communities are being bulldozed. But at least they didn't jeopardize their morals. At least they didn't jeopardize their ethics. I'm just happy about that. This whole stupid, yeah, again, who the rebel? LOL, as if Kamala and Joe aren't doing that. Again, you just have no concept of how a thing can be worse, do you? You just have no concept of it. You have no concept of how disastrous it would have been in the middle of a presidential campaign for the Biden-Harris administration to sever its ties with Israel. Like, you have just no concept of that. And yet, every credible reporter who saw Kamala Harris meet with Benjamin Netanyahu said that he did not like the meeting that he had with her because she was so forceful with him. Joe Biden said, hey man, we're going to do an arms embargo if you don't ease up. Benjamin Netanyahu is celebrating because Trump won. Why do you think that is? Because there is a better scenario for him to do the things that he's doing, and there is a worse scenario for him to do the things that he is doing. And the fact that you're just like, I don't see a distinction, is just the most privileged, ignorant bullshit. Listen, I obviously don't have a lot of hope on offer today, and I'm sorry for that. I was even trying earlier today to think, well, I lived through the first Trump administration, but then I was like, yeah, but that's because I'm lucky and I exist in a privileged identity. And a lot of my friends in more marginalized identities and communities aren't going to be as lucky, especially this time around when he has even more power. So I don't know. I don't know what to say. The lesson I hope everybody can learn by the time midterms roll around is that sometimes in life you have to choose between two things that you don't want to choose between. And you have to just make a value judgment of which one of those things leads to the least possible harm being done. You have to sit down and you have to make a difficult choice that might not sit with your spectral identity and your spectral nature. It might not sit well with your empathy or your sense of right and wrong or justice. Often in politics, you have to make strategic choices. It's often not that you're getting to choose something that really excites you or something that you feel really strongly about. It's often that you're trying to prevent catastrophic outcomes. If we can't learn this lesson, if we can't figure this out, that we have the numbers to win, we have the numbers to get the policies that we want, we have the numbers to achieve progress, we win when we show up, we lose when we don't. If you're in my comments right now and you're gloating and you're bragging about how, oh, look how your strategy didn't work, it fell apart. Why are you, I don't think you understand what you're doing. This is not good. Nobody, you didn't win. Nobody won. We all lost. We lost bad. We lost tragically, drastically. The people you claim to care about lost. The communities you claim to fight for and advocate for lost. The people you drew hard lines for lost. Everyone lost. And at the end of the day, it really is quite simple. They lost because of our inability to just do what was necessary, to just show up. Our personal self-righteous ego was more important. We just wanted to be right, you know? We wanted to be right more than we wanted to be useful. To the 67, 68 million of us out there who did our jobs, thank you. Thank you for using your voices. Thank you for using your power as a voter. Thank you for showing up. Don't stop showing up. When you have an opportunity to, don't stop showing up. Don't let the lesson that you learn from this be that showing up doesn't work. The lesson is that showing up works. What happened is we didn't show up in big enough numbers. Keep showing up. All right. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music, also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. Patreon.com/AustinArcher is a great way to support my show, support my channels, and what I do here and the work that I do here. Like I said earlier in the show, I operate on a shoestring budget, so I really do appreciate every single one of my Patreon patrons. Thank you so much for your support and helping this remain work that I can do. I appreciate you all. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your comments and your feedback in the chat today. Thank you for the support. I've been getting so many messages over the last few days. I know I'm engaging a lot with the detractors and with people who have the dissenting opinions, but our chat has been full of so much support. The chat right now is just is going off with so much support, so much love. My DMs on Instagram the last few days have been just packed with people sending such encouraging messages and just saying thank you. And I really, really do appreciate that. It means a lot to me. So thank you for those. They're helping to get me through and to keep fighting. So we'll see you all next time. Till then, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. All right. Love you. Bye-bye.